My name is Aurora Nadelku. I'm a professor at University of New Brunswick in Canada.
And you study unicellular organisms, don't you?
Actually, I study both unicellular organisms and simple multicellular organisms, specifically to try to understand the transition from the unicellular lifestyle to multicellular lifestyle with cell differentiation.
So tell me what you were mentioning in your talk today about how the little organisms that you study, what were they called?
So the group of organisms I study, they are called volvocene algae, and they have basically unicellular species called Chlamydomonas and multicellular organisms with a germ and a somatic cell type called Volvox.
Yes, and you were mentioning that these organisms actually can produce germ cells and so reproduce only if their somatic cells, the ordinary cells, actually grew in size.
So they have two cell types. The somatic cells are supposed to stay small and have their flagella work and basically move, no help the whole colony swim, while the reproductive cells are supposed to just grow bigger and bigger and then divide and make babies of the same structure as the mother.
So tell me a bit more in detail. How does that system work? How does the somatic cells, the ones that have the flagella and swim around, turn into germ cells and reproduce? What's happening?
So normally, during development, the germ cells divide many, many times to the point that a population of cells become very, very small, and those small cells become somatic cells and the large cells stay reproductive. However, there are mutants in which a gene is affected such that the somatic cells, although they start small and they should stay somatic, like no skin cells in our body, later on they gain the ability to reproduce, and by that I mean they start growing, lose the flagella, and start making babies on their own.
What connection can this have to cancer?
So in the sense that somatic cells regain their immortality, meaning they are not acting just for the interest of the colony, but rather they regain the ability to be immortal and regain their own individual level fitness, they start proliferating and they produce a mass of cells, and by doing that they negatively affect the fitness of the colony. In that respect, they are quite analogous to cancer cells, which pretty much do the same thing. They proliferate uncontrollably, and in the end, they affect the fitness of the organism.
Because, of course, cancer cells almost always start in somatic cells, don't they?
Yes. So in that respect, there is definite analogy. This mutant I'm discussing, the mutation is expressed in the somatic cell. So it is the somatic cell that starts proliferating the same way that cancer do, yes.
And why do you think it's worth studying Volvox, your model, rather than just studying cancer cells to understand cancer cells biology?
One possibility is that this is a much simpler system. It's simpler because there's only one type of somatic cell, and it's also simpler because the genetics underlying the cell differentiation is simpler, so it might be easier to get to the basic principles in a system in which a fewer genes are involved than to try to unravel all the interactions between genes that are involved in the differentiation of the somatic cell in complex organisms like ourselves. So sometimes it's easier to find the roots of the process in a system that it's less complex, so there are less complexity to unravel.
And in Volvox, is there any way of turning back the clock and making the germ cells behave themselves and revert to somatic cells if you want them to?
This is what I'm working on, and we're really hopeful that we could find, and we have always some indication that we can affect the intracellular status of these mutant cells in a way that would prevent them from continuing to proliferate. So yes.
And what sort of ways are you doing that?
So we first had to find ways to induce the gene in a condition that is outside the developmental context. So we were able to do that. And now we're trying to find environmental conditions that can simulate that signal. So we hope that by finding the right change in the environment, we could turn back the gene into being a cooperative gene.
Well, it would be great if we could do that in cancer as well.
In principle, that is the idea behind these experiments, to find a way to manipulate cancer cells by changing the environment, not necessarily by killing them or by affecting their genes, but just changing the expression of the genes in different conditions.
And even in humans and other mammals, you were mentioning that cells that move around that have cilia and flagella cannot reproduce, and that is something similar to what you've been finding in your unicellular organisms.
Yeah, so there is a constraint that applies to both my group of algae but also the ancestors of nematozoans or animals, and it's also present in our body. There's a constraint that has to do with a particular structure in the cell that cannot be used simultaneously for two functions. So that structure is called microtubule organizing center, and it organizes the microtubules that are responsible for the flagellar activity. But the same structure is also involved in organizing microtubules in the mitotic spindle when the cells divide. So this brings back a very general principle in biology, the idea of trade-offs, whether it's a functional trade-off or a life history trade-off. In many cases, there's a constraint that the use of one structure cannot be used for two functions at the same time. And the solution is basically to use the structure for one function in one cell type and for another, the other function in the other cell type. So this is supposed to be at the basis of the division between somatic cells and reproductive cells, because a cell cannot both reproduce and be motile. So the solution is that you have now cells that can only reproduce and cells that can only be motile.
So the general public might be thinking, okay, you've got sperm cells, but of course the tail falls off, doesn't it? And it's not involved itself in reproducing.
So the sperm cells never divide. To make more sperm cells, you divide some cells that do not have tail, and then they grow their tail.
And what allows the microtubules to decide which way they want to go?
The position of this microtubule organizing center. So the position of the microtubule organizing center in the cell, it's going to determine whether the microtubules are going to be used for growing the flagella or for division.
And is that itself determined very early on when things are newly created, or does it change throughout life?
So normally a cell decides, under quotation marks, to divide when conditions are right. When a cell reached a size large enough to divide, then some signals tell the cell, okay, now we are ready to divide. When the cell gets those signals, then the microtubule organizing centers leave the flagella and they position themselves in the cell in the two opposing poles, and they start organizing microtubules into the mitotic spindle. So there is a signal coming from the cell saying, okay, now we're ready to divide, leave the flagella, which now was good to have it work while we are looking for resources. So that was the survival phase of the growth phase. Now we're ready to divide, come and take care of the mitotic spindle, so to speak.
Okay, so they always start off as moving cells and then they turn into reproducing cells, but never the other way around.
Yes, so the unicellular life cycle starts with a growth phase, which involves the flagella being active and moving the cell, the unicellular organism, now searching for light if it's a photosynthetic organism or for resources in general. Then growth means increasing in size, which triggers cell replication. So for the cell replication to proceed and the chromosomes to be equally distributed between the two daughter cells, then you need the microtubule organizing center to be involved in forming the mitotic spindle.
And what other traits do cancer cells have in common with unicellular organisms?
One of the other things that cancer cells do, they escape cell death. So normally somatic cells should trigger a program of cell suicidal when they are damaged or when mutations affect them in a way that would be detrimental to the multicellular organism. Unicellular organisms also have this cell suicidal system in place, which should be turned on when the population fitness of the population is increased. However, there are mutants in unicellular populations that escape this program cell death fate, so they continue to stay alive and divide when they should, in fact, induce cell suicidal. So there is another analogy between cancer cells and mutants in unicellular populations. Death evasion, so they just escape or they do not trigger cell suicidal when they should.
How long have you been interested in cancer?
Not that long, probably just for the last couple of years. I do have an interest in multicellularity and the evolution of multicellularity that goes back to maybe 10 years ago, but cancer is just something that I recently became interested in.
So you see the link between cancer and the origins of multicellularity, do you?
Absolutely. Although some of the traits or genes, I can see them trace back to unicellular lineages.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.